Hello, I'm Amanda Smith, and on ABC Radio National, this is Artworks. And in our summer highlights series, today we're heading into the world of anachronistic technology, pseudo-Victorian style, a neo-Luddite attitude, the world that is steampunk. Also, how do you express in dance ideas about cultural relativism and the failings of multiculturalism? Not many could, I'd suggest, or would even want to. But Lloyd Newson, the artistic director of the London-based company DV8, can and does, and he joins us in just a tick. And later in the hour, here in Artworks, as the Israeli-Palestinian peace process just seems to endlessly stumble and lurch and get nowhere very much, we're going to talk about the art and graffiti that's on the wall in the West Bank. Like the Berlin Wall, it's as much a surface to paint on as a separation barrier. On the face of it, a dance performance called Can We Talk About This might seem like a contradiction in terms. This is a contradiction, though, that Lloyd Newson and his company DV8 have always defied. Lloyd Newson is an Australian dancer who set up DV8 Physical Theatre in London 25 years ago. And this new work, Can We Talk About This, had its first performance at the Sydney Opera House in 2011 as part of the Spring Dance Festival there. It's since been touring around Europe before a season in London in March this year. Just before the Sydney season, though, I spoke to Lloyd Newson from London, just at the time when the rioting and looting was happening there. And since the DV8 studios are in East London, I asked him if this was close to any of the trouble.
There were some problems close by, but nothing too significant in the immediate area where I live.
Well, with what's been happening in London and other cities in the UK, there's been a lot of hand-wringing about moral and social collapse, as well as some concern not to cast it as race-related. Now, this in a way relates to this new work of yours, so I'm interested in how you read the tensions and fault lines that have been around you.
Well, I think there is a difference, actually, and I'm very anxious or nervous to start talking about the causes of the riots, because I think it's a very complicated issue, it's very manifold, and there's many reasons. As many reasons as the variety of people were arrested. Can We Talk About This looks at multiculturalism, free speech, and Islam. I'm interested in exploring those issues for a number of reasons. The previous piece that I made, which is a verbatim theatre piece based on interviews with over 85 people, to be straight with you, was about homosexuality and religion. And of the many Muslims that we interviewed, the majority, in fact everybody we interviewed, didn't want us to use their names for fear of reprisals, mainly from within their own communities. Equally, at the same time that we're making this work, around about 2009, Gallup and the Centre for Muslim Studies did a survey asking British Muslims, 500 British Muslims, whether they thought homosexuality was acceptable. What percentage do you think of 500 British Muslims thought that homosexuality was acceptable?
I don't know. Tell me.
Zero. Now, that's quite an extraordinary statistic. But when I would mention this statistic and the experiences of having interviewed a number of gay Muslims, many people, academics, friends of mine on the left at dinner parties, it was extraordinary how many didn't want to talk about the issue, thought I was being offensive, or denied the evidence completely. Now, part of that might be to do with the fact that majorities often feel that it is unfair or oppressive to talk about minorities. But it also might be to do with the fact that people are fearful, and they could be fearful of many things, perhaps post-colonial guilt. But why can we not talk about Islam particularly and scrutinise aspects of it compared to, for example, Christianity or Judaism?
Well, this really is a question for our times. You know, how do you tolerate other people's intolerance? When to question values held by others, say about homosexuality or about women, to question them seems itself intolerant or racist. But are you making an argument for something in this work? Do you articulate a position?
Well, one of the last interviews we did was with a gentleman called Dr. Usama Hassan, and he is a scientist. He lectures at Middlesex University in information technology. He is also a practicing imam and has been an imam at Leighton Mosque for 25 years. Just this year, he made a statement, I mean, he'd been talking about this for quite a long time, that the Quran may be compatible with Darwin's theory of evolution. For that comment, he received multiple death threats. He had to receive police protection, both at home and his workplace, for just suggesting that the Quran might be compatible with Darwin's theory of evolution. If a committed, devout Muslim cannot speak about these issues in Britain without his life being threatened, then I think we all should be worried. And we also should be concerned for supporting the voice of minorities also within Britain. And unfortunately, I think sometimes under the ban of multiculturalism, there is a liberal blind spot where we go, oh, that is another culture, we shouldn't say anything. I think we've lost a sense of moral compass about what is a sense of absolutism, what is absolutely right and what is absolutely wrong. We've got lost in this sort of moral haze of, well, it's different cultural practices or different religious practices, and we've got to respect that. And I think Britain particularly has become, in its desire to be tolerant, and that is the thing that attracts many of us, like myself, who are foreigners to this country, has got itself into a jam over this issue.
Well, yes, a fundamental principle of multiculturalism is that you don't have to give up your cultural practices and identity and assimilate into your new country. But how are you making this kind of critique of multiculturalism that you've expressed into a dance performance?
Well, initially we set about interviewing, we've interviewed probably about 50 people with regards to this issue. People like Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who was a Dutch MP from a Somalian background. She made a film with Theo van Gogh called Submission, which looked at Islam's treatment of women. And for that film, Theo van Gogh was murdered by a Dutch Muslim guy called Mohamed Bouyeri. We've also interviewed people like Anne Cryer, who is a Labour MP, now retired, who fought for many years to try and have Parliament addressed forced marriage and honour-based abuse. For this, she was called a racist, despite having, you know, grandchildren of mixed heritage, racial heritage. We also asked Muslims themselves whether they felt they were censored, because it's important to hear all the perspectives within the piece. And gradually we reduced the interviews. We had hundreds of hours of interviews, and we combine both movement and text and try and look at the relationship between movement and text. I'm not interested in having a group of performers on stage sit still and just recount the various stories that we've heard. Also, it's very critical that all the interviewees had direct experience of the themes, multiculturalism, freedom of speech, and Islam. Otherwise, it's just people giving opinion, and anyone can give opinion.
But you are also including some fairly extreme views in all sorts of ways. For example, from those in the UK who led the book burning years ago of Salman Rushdie's novel, Satanic Verses, to those who are challenging the rise of fundamentalist religions.
We're giving voice for all people. So we are asking also Islamists. Somebody we interviewed, a guy called Mizanur Rahman, was imprisoned initially for 6 years, then it was reduced to 4 years for protesting outside the Danish embassy in London against the Danish cartoons. Mm-hmm. Why should he have been imprisoned? What was it he said? I mean, his banner did say, behead those who insult Islam, but is it enough just to have a banner saying that at an open protest? In fact, we then interviewed the editor, went to Copenhagen, interviewed the editor of Jyllands-Posten, which was a newspaper that published the Muhammad cartoons. And Fleming Rose, the editor, who was responsible for the publication of those cartoons, said that he didn't consider that type of banner to be incitement to violence, unless he was standing next to the person holding the banner. So the issue of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable is at the heart of this work.
And how are you expressing this in movement?
Great.
Well, it's hard to say on the radio, but you know.
It is hard. And I've just demonstrated something really brilliant, which most of you have missed. But that will give you an example of the type of thing we're doing. No, it's it The problem with a lot of dance, and as someone who's come from a dance background, I don't know whether you share the same beliefs that I do, but often dance is dominated by aesthetics and prettiness. So we have to try and find a vocabulary of movement that still holds the notions of body language that everybody understands. If you walk along the street and someone comes towards you and they're slightly holding one arm and not moving moving the other one excessively, you know there's something wrong. Often, even if you go up and down an escalator, you look at the way somebody holds their head or what's in their eyes. You can look at somebody's eyes and have a sense of whether they're angry, frustrated, bored. And these are the type of very subtle things that I try and build into the movement. So we really use a notion of body language that everybody understands, and then we extend and exaggerate that, hopefully not to the point that it becomes just aesthetic shapes. And I still don't know after all these years what, you know, an arabesque is. And for people who are not sure what arabesque is, I'm also not sure, but it means standing on one leg with another leg high in the air in a straight line. Behind you, that's right. Thank you. What is the point of that? And that has been, I think, the dilemma I've had over the years, coming from, you know, having had a university background and studied psychology and social work. It was very, for the first few years, I was satisfied being on stage trying to control my body. But after about 4 or 5 years, when my pirouettes started improving, my mind started stagnating. And I've been intrigued over the last 25 years I've been working in the field of movement, how I can make it more relevant, how I can make it talk about real issues, talk about something.
Well, now, because you're performing this work at the Spring Dance Festival in Sydney, and the whole event is dedicated to the memory of Pina Bausch, the German choreographer, I wanted to ask you about, Lloyd, your response to Pina Bausch's dance making, whether it had an influence on you.
I think Pina Bausch is an amazing choreographer, amazing human being, in the sense that she was able to take everyday, often trivial, things that many of us would consider trivial, and present them in a theatrical movement context that would ensure you remember them, even if you disliked what she was presenting on stage. Often I've seen pieces of hers that have gone on for hours and been deeply frustrated and annoyed. But then I can't wipe the images out of my head. They stay with me because she dares do something else rather than offer prettiness and popcorn to audiences. She dared to bore people. She dared to allow scenes to go on for incredible amounts of time. And she also had incredible dancers, but she didn't think twice about having them come on stage and not do tricks. They didn't have to point their feet or throw their legs high in the air in every work. Some works they did. But overall, what was important to her was that dance communicated something, communicated ideas, communicated the personalities of her performers on stage, rather than being, as many choreographers use their dances, like pigments that create, you know, without personality, that all they are is colors and almost inhuman at times. So I felt Bausch revolutionized the way we saw dance, and she had incredible courage. I remember a critic telling me a story when she first took over the company, the State Ballet Company in Wuppertal, that had traditionally done very classic and traditional dance pieces. There were only about 8 people left in the audience because most of the people had got up and left. And finally, somebody turned around and said, "Frau Bausch, you're killing the dance." But it didn't dissuade her from continuing on her path and doing the things she believed in. And I think very few people in the dance world have that courage. In fact, I think very few artists have that courage. We have a tendency to want to make work that we think will satisfy the public. And often, ironically, by doing that, we just add to the deluge of decorative, meaningless artwork that's out there, particularly, often, unfortunately, I have to say, in dance.
And the very first performances of Can We Talk About This were at the Sydney Opera House in August last year. It's since been on tour in Europe, with a season coming up in London in March. Lloyd Newson is the artistic director of Deviate Physical Theatre, which he founded in London 25 years ago. Boy from Albury, who studied psychology and social work at Melbourne University, now runs one of the most interesting dance companies in the world.